The Punt, William Hill's Top Flight Football Podcast.
Hello everyone, welcome along. You're listening to the Punt Podcast. Dave Kellner here alongside Lee Phelps in the studio. First of all, a good morning, Mr. Phelps.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you, sir?
Yeah, very good. 11-5 winning nap, so I'm feeling good.
We don't talk about the naps until the podcast. You've just got in there just in time.
Right, thanks.
Lee, we are joined by LUTV commentator Tom Kerwin this morning. Morning, Tom.
All right, gents.
Good to have you with us. We thought we'd give you a taste of the big time, Tom, because obviously, LUTV commentator at Leeds United. We don't know when this will happen again. When will Leeds next be in the Premier League?
Oh, wow, what a question that is. I often watch Match of the Day like a cat that's been left outside in the rain through a window. I'm kind of watching on thinking, I've no idea, and I hope it's in my lifetime. I'd expect it to be, but that is the eternal question, Dave. Nobody knows when it'll happen. It's probably going to happen when it sort of surprises us, when probably everyone's thinking it's not going to happen. It probably will do. So it's crazy, but as you guys know, the Championship is so tough. I mean, I know it's often said and managers can use it as an excuse, but it is a really tough league to get out, really hard.
Tom, you do get to watch Premier League football on in-play radio as
I
well.
Do.
Like, so we give you that little bit of, you know, that little bit of an angle in to
that
the big time.
The taste of the big time. Hull West Ham the other week. That was,
you know. I only give you the best ones.
No, I think the Premier League this year, it started off great. I think there's already been some fantastic matches, and I think there's a few teams that'll surprise a few people. I've been so impressed with Leicester. Guys, you know, yep. The start that they've made, you know, they're going to do very well, I think, this year.
As ever, we start off with the TV games and just the one on Saturday, and it's Saturday 5:30 p.m. Aston Villa versus Manchester City. Aston Villa 6-1, the draw 11-4, Manchester City in the betting 8-15. Manchester City, Lee, won 5 of the last 6 against Villa, but coming to this on the back of that disappointing draw with Roma at the Etihad in the Champions League. In the build-up to the new season, we were talking about Manchester City maybe becoming a real force in Champions League football. It's not materialised, Lee.
No, it hasn't. And, you know, they were my pick to go furthest in the Champions League. That's not looking like a great pick at the moment, to be honest. They just don't seem to be able to get it right. Did a podcast yesterday with Mark Ogden from The Telegraph, who's based up in the Northwest, and he was saying the fans aren't, there's all this thing about the fans not really being up for it, but you know the crowd is a bit, you know, all the ex-Man United players and like Scholes and Ferdinand were giving,
brutal,
it, yeah, giving
it
plenty. He basically, Mark was saying, the fans aren't that bothered really. He said, you've still got the same Man City fans. It's not like you've had this influx of, you know, wealthy London fans. It's still a pretty tight core of Manchester folk who support Manchester City. And he said, they're not really, it's almost like they're not quite ready for the Champions League yet. They're happy with winning the Premier League, thanks very much. Went for years and years with no success. So it's a bit, there's a bit of a, you know, I think the owners and the manager, obviously, and the players want to win the Champions League. The fans maybe not as bothered. I think they come back here, though, and get straight back into their Premier League stride. I think just before that Roma game, they were just starting to motor a little bit. I know Sheffield Wednesday aren't a Premier League team, but they put 7 past them in that second half display. Scored 4 at Hull, and, you know, they conceded 2 goals, but they were daft. You know, the Mangala own goal, then he gave away a penalty. It was just a bad day for him all round. They could have won that one 4-0 and no one would have batted an eyelid, to be fair. I think they'll continue from there. Villa, as we know, not great at home, generally, over the past few seasons. They've developed into this counter-attacking side over the last 4 or 5 seasons. Started really well, but I think the amount of chances they've been creating has been terrible. The bottom of the league on shots per game. They average 7.7 shots per game, let's say 8 to be kind to them. Shots on target per game, 1.5. Yes. I'm not sure what half a shot on target is, but you know, but they've had 9 shots on goal, on target, in their games so far. 6 games, 9 shots. You can't have that kind of, you know, that kind of stat going into a game against Manchester City, who, you know, you won't be surprised to know, have had a lot more than that. They've already had 29 shots on target in the Premier League. That's enough for me to know that a team with the calibre of strikers that Manchester City have got, you know, that amount of shots on target, they're going to score, like, what, 1 in 3 of them? So, you know, Villa won't be able to live with them. The pitch, Villa Park, big old pitch. Teams like Man City, I think, love going there because they know they can go there and play open football. Villa try and soak it up and break on them, but it just doesn't work for Villa. They're too open. So it's going to be a Manchester City win here. 1-2. I think, what was the phrase?
8-15.
8-15. It's a little short. It's one for, I think, every acca should include Manchester City in there. But, you know, just for a bit more value, you know, if Aguero starts, Aguero scores in this game for me. So, you know, Aguero to score. And City to win, probably the way I'd go. I mean, Dzeko to score and City to win, 7-4 is the headline offer. So you're probably going to get a bit more value on that just because it is the headline offer. Aguero to score in a City win is 7-5. So probably take the Dzeko one, seeing as they've given us a bit of extra on that. He scored 2 at Hull. So, you know, he's in good form. And I think, you know, I think we'll start to see Villa slip away gradually now.
Yeah, and we see City score goals away from home as well. They've scored at least twice in their last 6 away games in the league. And Sergio Aguero, who you just mentioned, he's got 10 in his last 12 Premier League away games. They're a side built for the counter-attack City, which is going to be vitally important in this match. Tom, Aston Villa, they've had a torrid run, really, in terms of fixtures. Liverpool away, Arsenal at home, Chelsea away, and now Man City at home. Doesn't get much worse than that for Villa.
Not really, and I think they'll be delighted with where they are. I mean, I've been quite a fan of Villa over the last couple of years, only because of the sort of challenge that Paul Lambert is facing. It's well documented, of course, with the money that's been cut. Martin O'Neill had millions and millions to spend, but I've been quite impressed with the business he's done. I've been impressed with you know, what he's managed to do with a very young side, and I think the fact they're not having many shots on target, as Lee mentions, they're not really in control of many games that they're in. I mean, they beat a Hull side who Steve Bruce described as the worst performance he'd seen from his side since he took charge of the Tigers at Villa Park. And I would worry the fact they didn't score against Newcastle at home. I don't think they find the back of the net at the weekend in this game. I would be looking at the market Villa to score and no, it's around 6-5. I think it's a great bet because I can't see Villa being able to break down this Man City defence that is very strong. And it's interesting, you know, what Lee was saying there about Man City at the moment. I mean, I kind of watched them over the last few years and I don't think they're really moving forward. They're still an amazing side, we know that. But I think the fact that in midweek, you know, watching the game against Roma, you know, the fact they're bringing on Frank Lampard, who is a top player, but, you know, you're bringing on him in a Champions League game to try and change that. I just look at their squad now, and I think that's why people are looking at Chelsea, you know, maybe running away with the league, because I can't see that sort of depth there. But they still have players like Aguero. Again, he'd be a pick for me at any time to find the back of the net at Villa Park. His record, as you mentioned, over there in away games is fantastic. And Edin Dzeko, I can understand why he's the headline offer, because huge chunk of his goals, around 65% of his goals, have come away from home, which is remarkable, considering how many goals Man City have scored at the Etihad over the last few years since Dzeko's been in the side. So I can't see Villa getting anything, and I can't even see them scoring.
Yeah, they're 6-5 not to score in the game, Aston Villa. Those two headline offers again. Edin Dzeko to score and Man City to win 7-4. Andreas Weimann to score and Aston Villa to win is 16-1. Bit of team news here as well. Christian Benteke could make a return on Saturday after 5 months out injured with an Achilles tendon problem, which would be a big boost for Aston Villa.
It would, but I think he'd be lacking match fitness, obviously, at the top level, and I don't think the City defenders would have too much of an issue. I wouldn't be surprised if, even if he's ready, they don't start him. I mean, as a manager, would you rather risk him against Man City when you're probably not going to get a result, or would you save him for, you know, some of the games that Villa have got coming up, which are, you know, they've got Everton away, QPR away, Tottenham at home. You know, Everton away, maybe, you know, they could get something out of that. They should be going to QPR and winning, so I think maybe he'll bring him off the bench. I'd be surprised if he's ready for a test like City.
On to Sunday's matches then, and we've actually got a decent Sunday. We had what was it, West Brom last week?
Good game in the end though, 4-0.
What was it, West Brom?
West Brom Burnley, wasn't it?
Just the one match 4-0. Last week. We've got 3 on Sunday this week, yeah. So looking forward to this. We start off with Manchester United. They take on Everton. Manchester United 4-6. The draw 13-5, Everton 9-2. Tom, Manchester United actually have been supported in this market. Opened up 8-11, into 4-6 now. They are without Wayne Rooney following his sending off against West Ham. And we constantly, Tom, on this podcast, talk about this team being unbalanced. It's going to be interesting to see if they stick with the diamond. And with the absence of Wayne Rooney, Who plays at the top of the diamond?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think one of the stats regarding Manchester United is the amount of players they've used already. I mean, you know, we've not reached the second international break of the season yet. They've already used 29 players. They used 30 in the whole of last season. They've used way more than any other team, and that, for me, suggests the imbalance, but also that Louis van Gaal doesn't know what his strongest team is yet. He's still trying to fit everybody in. It's well documented and well talked about, you know, the transfers that they brought into the club. Good players, but how they're all going to click and how they're all going to work is still up in the air. And I just look at this game, and I know Everton have been conceding goals. I know they haven't been playing very well. But when you're looking at Manchester United at Old Trafford this year, that is a nervy place now. That is not a place that they are confident of getting results week in, week out. It is not the backbone to their season. And I look at Everton at 9-2, and even, you know, drawn a bet around 11-4, and I can't really look away from that. I'm attracted to it because I just think Manchester United are still going to be very, very nervy. Yeah, they've got players who can, you know, top players who can do something out of nothing, but I think they're a very, very fragile side at the moment. Everton aren't going great, I know, but, you know, I just think Everton at some point are going to turn it on, and this might be the occasion for them. The only issue, of course, is they were playing, of course, last night, you know, and Sunday lunchtime, early kickoff, whether that has any effect on them, because that is a tough thing to balance, the Europa League and of course, you know, the Premier League commitments too.
That's a big factor, Lee, I think, coming in here. They haven't had long to prepare for this match.
No, and one of our previous guests, Tony Scott, from the last weekend, was it?
Yes,
it was. From the Liverpool Echo. I've been chatting to him on Twitter this week, and he just tweeted me this morning about their arrival time, and he said they got back at 3 a.m. This morning as we record this. Wow. from Russia. So, you know, and he put out quite a strong team. I thought he'd put out a weakened team. So, you know, it's got to be tough, hasn't it? You know, I know people say, oh yeah, football is better than going down the pit, but, you know, you think about the practicalities of it. Get back at 3 a.m. you know, they won't go in today, I'm sure. They might have a team meeting later on, but they'll probably have a bit of training on Saturday morning, and then suddenly, you know, it's a 12 o'clock start, not even a, you know, not even a 12:45 start. It's early, you know, it's not something that, you know, the players will have to be up very early in pasta for breakfast and all the rest of it, so it will be tricky. I spoke to Robbie Savage about this yesterday doing the video previews, and he said it didn't really ever affect him as a player, and he doesn't really think it affects players that much. He thinks it's a bit of an excuse. I'm going to go for goals. I think, you know, Everton was solid against Liverpool in that 4-3-3. I don't know if he'll stick with that though. I think he'll try and go for Man United here, Martinez, because they've got 9 first team players out. You have to go and try and beat Manchester United at the moment, I think. You know, if Jones is in the defence for Man United, there's no way he's fit enough to be playing at a top-level match. And this is Manchester United's first proper test of the season, the first top 6 team from last year who they're playing against. You know, you're looking at, you know, perhaps a back four of what, Shaw, Rojo, Jones, Raphael, and Blint, Fletcher, Di Maria and Mata in midfield, and Van Persie, Falcao. Obviously, going forward, no real problem with
that. That's not that, compared to some of the teams they've played defensively so far this season. That's not bad.
No, if Jones is fit.
If Jones is fit, there's conflicting reports. Depending where you look, he's bound to play. If you're looking at another place, he's definitely out. So there are conflicting reports.
There's no mention of Paddy McNair in there, by the way, who obviously had his debut against West Ham and played pretty well. So they have got players, obviously. But you wonder if, you know, Lukaku could give them the runaround. I think, you know, he's a strong player and someone who likes to bully defences. So I wouldn't be surprised if they get right after them, Everton. Because I think, you know, you'd rather try and start quickly if you're Everton and, you know, and pray you don't wilt too much in the second half. I went with that bet last week in the West Ham game of over 1.5 goals in the first half, which I really liked. It landed really nicely. Over 2.5 landed. So did the both teams to score in the first half.
Yep.
Now, the both teams to score in the first half is 11-4 this week, which I like again. The first half over goals is 5-4, so they've trimmed that one right in. Over 2.5, 4-1. I'm going to go with the both teams to score, I think.
Okay, in the first half.
Yeah, in the first half. I'm going to give that one another chance and think Everton, you know, really try and come out and have a go at this one. I mean, the other thing here is, just on the match prices, I've stayed away from Man United a lot this season. 4-6, still odds on against an Everton team who we know have been stuttering but have got quality. Now, Everton are 9-2, right? That 9-2 means you can have, you know, Everton plus a goal at 6-5, Everton and the draw, at odds against this Man United team, Come on, West Ham were unlucky to lose.
One note of caution here. Everton have given away more points than any other team having been in front in the Premier League this season. So they are not bomb-proof Everton. And under Martinez, Tom, everyone was saying he's going to be fantastic for Everton. But he inherited a solid team defensively, and they seem to have regressed in that area, Everton, in the last 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, I think his defence has been completely shaken up, you know, with Coleman's injury, and he's having to move players around. John Stones at fullback, who's far more comfortable in the centre-back position, and I think that's where they've looked vulnerable. I'll tell you what the most damaging result for Everton was this season. It was on the opening day against Leicester. They were cruising in that game. You know, they were comfortable. You know, they let the game slip right at the end. Wood scored, you know, with 4 minutes to go, and I don't think they've ever recovered from it. The only thing that they have kept doing is scoring goals, and I think Martinez's philosophy of we'll score one more than you, and that's putting it very bluntly, but it is along those lines. You know, they have scored a lot of goals this season already. You know, two against Hull, two against Leicester, two against Man City in a defeat. Obviously they were beaten by Southampton, but you know, you're going back and further forward, and they've scored goals. Three in that defeat against Chelsea at home, two against Arsenal, two against West Brom, two against Crystal Palace. They're not getting the results, but they're scoring goals. Yeah. I like the look of them scoring a couple of goals in this game. That's 21-10 over 1.5 Everton goals. And an omen for you, both Sir Alex Ferguson and David Moyes lost their first game in charge of Manchester United against Everton.
Nice.
There you go.
Like it.
Stat
like
of the week.
It.
That's vying for stat of the week.
It is vying for stat of the week, definitely. Let's move on. Let's have a look at Chelsea versus Arsenal. 2:05 PM kickoff on Sunday afternoon. Chelsea 4-6, the draw 13-5, Arsenal in the betting at 9-2. Two headline offers here. Diego Costa to score and Chelsea to win is 7-4. Danny Welbeck to score and Arsenal to win in the market at 9-1. Chelsea remain unbeaten in the league, Lee, but they've got to face the might of Danny Welbeck this weekend. Everyone talking about Welbeck following his hat-trick against Galatasaray midweek. I want to see if Danny Welbeck can produce at Stamford Bridge. Can he go away from home and get a goal out of one opportunity? It's all right doing it against Galatasaray, who were woeful, absolutely woeful at the back midweek. Mm. Different kettle of fish this entirely.
Yeah, in answer to your question, I don't think so. No, I don't think he is the sort of player he's had 13 shots in the Premier League, Danny Welbeck, and he's got a goal. It's not a great ratio. We know he's got, you know, the hat trick was great, but they're all goals that I'm not trying to decry a hat trick here, but you know, they were all goals that you would expect him to finish, weren't they? And he muscled them out of the way quite easily. You can't imagine the Chelsea back line.
They were terrible.
And they won't allow those through balls. I think he's better when he's running onto balls like that. And it was, you know, he did great. Let's not take anything away from him, but not for me. You know, this was the game last year when they had Gibbs sent off very early, didn't they? 15 minutes gone, Gibbs goes off, and they were already two down, by the way, at that point, and they lost 6-0 to Chelsea in the end. One of those terrible results that Arsenal had against some of the bigger sides. Eto'o scored for them, Schürrle, Hazard, Oscar got a couple, and then Mohamed Salah even got in with one after Gibbs. I mean, you know, they're going to keep it tight, I guess. But the thing for me for Arsenal this season is they haven't really strung any performances together. You know, you look at their form so far and what they've done. You know, after they got the 2-2 draw against City, fine, no problem. They went to Dortmund and were embarrassed. Came back and beat Villa 3-0 when Villa were flying, in inverted commas. Then lost to Southampton in the Cup. Then they were all right against Tottenham. Then they go and play really well against Galatasaray. I think that'll continue. I think Chelsea win this game. I don't think Chelsea will have too many problems. They've been really good at home, as you expect from Chelsea. Did concede two against Swansea, but other than that, they've kept clean sheets. The first of them, of course, was that John Terry own goal. And then they were 4-1 up when Shelby scored late on. So maybe a little bit of concentration lapsing. But I think Chelsea could win this 1-0, to be honest. Yep. I'm not sure they'll give Arsenal much of a sniff. And I just don't know if Arsenal know what they are at the moment. It'd be interesting to see with the team news. I was listening to one of our other colleagues, Al Ross, on In Play Radio the other night. And Al started doing a podcast, which I'm sure you can find on Twitter. I think it's Alistair_Ross. But he was talking about, I think Al's an Arsenal fan.
You can find it on Facebook as well. He keeps posting it over and over again.
Is Al an Arsenal fan?
Al is an Arsenal fan.
Well, he was talking about this kind of, I mean, you won't be surprised to know he called it a triumvirate.
Did he really?
Fantastic word, brilliant word. He said that basically what he was saying was that with Welbeck and Sanchez seem to be developing this kind of understanding quite quickly, and with Ozil suddenly fitting in behind them, they seem to be the three that really seems to be clicking quite quickly.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if they'll get the space, you know, against Chelsea to be able to operate like that. So I'm not sure you'll see the full effect of that, if Al's right. But I think, you know, the following week when they're at home to Hull, I think that might be the time to have a look at that, you know, and think Arsenal could maybe get a few goals. So, you know, that, it's interesting that Al's, you know, picked that up and seen some positives from Ozil, because his performances have improved over the last couple of weeks. So, but for me, Chelsea to win 2-0 here.
9-5 for Chelsea to win 2-0. It's fashionable, Tom, to talk about Arsenal lacking a leader, but it is significant that they've not won any of their last 14 in the Premier League against Chelsea, Man United or Man City. Figures read 1-0, drawn 7, lost 7. That's something that's got to change if Arsenal are going to compete for Premier League honours.
It's what's cost them in recent seasons. And I think that stat tells a big chunk of the story. But the other side of it is, you watch those games and they've been outplayed, they've been outmuscled, they've been outthought, and I think it's where a lot of the criticism towards Arsene Wenger comes from. I mean, this fixture, you know, has always been built as Wenger versus Mourinho, and I think it's a bit unfair because people kind of throw up the fact that Wenger's never got one over on Mourinho in a competitive game. And I kind of look at when Mourinho came to England, and he came as Arsenal were on the decline. You know, the Invincibles were breaking up. Chelsea were suddenly spending money. So I think it's a bit of an unfair sort of thing to throw at Arsene Wenger, who, for me, I mean, I'm not an Arsenal fan, obviously, but I've got huge respect for what he's done. I think his signings have been very astute. I agree with what Al was saying now. I mean, I think the three players, if you can get Mesut Ozil playing and playing as well as he did at Villa Park, then, you know, you've got players that are going to cause any team's problems. But the key for me in this game is Arsenal have got to make Chelsea do some defending, because Chelsea at home, they have conceded a few goals already this season, but, you know, I think you've got to take control of that midfield battle. And I just wondered, the lineup formation wise, what both sides will do to try and combat each other. One of the key areas of the pitch will be Cesc Fabregas, who has made a fantastic return to English football with his assists, and you know, he's already got a goal at Stamford Bridge, and I kind of look at him and I think you've got to make him defend. And I think if Arsenal can make Cesc Fabregas have to defend, either if Ozil wins that battle, if he plays in that role, you know, it sort of just behind a striker or wherever it floats around, that for me is an absolute key area, because I think Arsenal will only get something from Chelsea if they go for it. I think if they try and sit back and soak up, there's too much firepower in that Chelsea side. So I'm a bit with Lee on this. I think Chelsea win the game. They've scored early goals as well at Stamford Bridge, so I'd probably look at Chelsea getting a goal too in the first half.
One other quick one is that, I mean, that headline offer, Costa to score and Chelsea to win 7-4. I know he played 90 minutes in Portugal, and Mourinho said, you know, he struggles to play three games in a week. I think that's a bit of Mourinho kidology, to be fair. You know, the Arsenal backline never fills me full of confidence, you know, with Mertesacker in there. Costa could easily score a goal here. I mean, I talked about Welbeck's stats. Look at Costa. He's had 21 shots on goal so far this season in the Premier League. Scored 8 goals.
Yeah,
that's a ratio.
That's a good conversion.
Kind of like me at 5-a-side.
Yes, I think shots-wise, definitely.
Yeah, I think I'm watching the Man City Chelsea game the other week, and Vincent Kompany was just outstanding against Diego Costa. Didn't give him a sniff. But you worry, you know, can Mertesacker or whoever else in the Arsenal backline do what Kompany did? And I think the answer to that is no, because Kompany was out to him quickly. Every time he dropped short to get the ball, he was in his face. And Diego Costa looked ruffled that afternoon. And I don't think Arsenal have got the ability really to deal with that.
Just one other point with Diego Costa as well. If he is to rest Diego Costa, Didier Drogba might get a start in this game. He's got 15 goals in 15
ruled out.
Appearances.
Is ankle problem.
I know, it's
I looked at that as well, because he Arsenal hate
playing him, don't they?
Didier Drogba.
It's kidology, he'll start.
Yeah, he will. Yeah,
Diego
no
Costa
doubt.
Will start,
yeah,
won't he?
And Drogba.
And Drogba, yeah.
And Remy.
Let's move on. Let's have a look at West Ham QPR, which is the evening match on Sunday, 4:15 PM kickoff. West Ham 19-20, the draw 23-10. QPR in the betting at 3-1. I'm pretty strong, Tom, on West Ham at the moment.
you're that strong. It's bringing a ticket to your throat. I am. I think You know, West Ham, watching them against Hull, I thought they were unlucky not to win that game. I think they're playing with some good pace in their side. I think a bit of a masterstroke really from Sam Allardyce moving Stuart Downing into a more central role, because he's that kind of player where, you know, we know when he burst onto the scene, it was his wing play at Middlesbrough and his pace and his crossing ability, but, you know, he's lost that pace, and he lost it a few years ago. But he's a very good footballer. Technically, he's a very good footballer. So I think to move him into a central position where he can start to dictate things, especially with the injuries West Ham have got, has been fantastic. And, you know, while I'm a fan of West Ham in this game, you can't be a fan of Queen's Park Rangers. I honestly think they are one of the worst sides to come up from the Championship. I don't think the signings that have been made have strengthened the team. They're in complete disarray defensively. And I can't see anything other than a West Ham victory. I think, again, there could be goals in the match. I think Sarko, for me, is just a fantastic signing for West Ham. He's done great, as is Ener Valencia. As I said, West Ham now are playing with some pace and power. And I think there's a general feel-good factor at Upton Park. And I've been down to Upton Park a few times, and when things aren't going great, as they have not been over the last 18 months, 2 years, it seems to set in a real malaise around the place. And it's not a sort of something dreamt up by newspapers that, oh, West Ham want to play this great attractive football. Every football fan wants to see their team play great football. But there is an issue there at West Ham with how they have been playing. But it's a different story this year. And I think the feel-good factor there, and the fact that QPR defensively could concede a bucket load here. If West Ham are on the game, they win comfortably.
Yeah, I agree. West Ham, that win against Liverpool, Lee, was very impressive. Not disgraced by any means at Old Trafford either. I feel the need to chart their progress. They are my dad's team, and he's even happy at the moment. He wanted Sam Allardyce out.
It's just your dad being happy.
Well, like precisely. Precisely. It's huge for me personally. They look good at the moment, West Ham. And as Tom mentioned there, QPR got to be one of the worst sides in the Premier League, barring Burnley, maybe.
Yeah, I got QPR on before the start of the season. I thought they'd be better than they are. They're not. I've been looking for positives, you know, because, by the way, I agree with pretty much everything that Tom's just said, so I'm probably going to reiterate a lot of what he said. I'll be quick. The positives for QPR, first of all, and there aren't too many of them, I suppose, but you look at, you know, they've got some players that, like Eduardo Vargas, is starting to settle in. They look like they're getting better. And up front, obviously, you know, the goal for Austin was fantastic. But the defence is just, it's not getting any better. You know, you look at their away performances so far, and they've been very poor. You know, they conceded, you know, 4 at Man United, lost 2-1 to Southampton. That could have been more, by the way. Southampton had 9 shots on target in that game. You know, if the Cranchar free kick goes in at the end, they get away with a 2-2 draw. Everyone's like, oh, well done, QPR. That's not what happened in the game. They also conceded 4 at Tottenham and lost 1-0 to Burton Albion. They are woeful. They've already allowed their opponents a total of 55 shots on goal away from home in the Premier League. That's just away from home in 3 games. Now, you know, Tom mentioned Sacco, 12 shots, scored 3 Premier League goals, scored in the League Cup at home as well. Valencia and him together look like they're unsettling defences. Valencia's a little bit more, I suppose, a little bit more erratic, I think you'd say. So I think if you're looking at those two, and they're both the same price, I think you have to go with Sacco at the moment at 7-5 any time. Headline offer is Sacco to score and West Ham to win, 3-1. Wouldn't put anyone off that. West Ham to win and over 2.5 goals, I like that as well. But I think, you know, just for the value, West Ham to win and over 2.5 goals, by the way, is 15-8. So I'll go with Sacco to score and West Ham to win at 3-1.
Yeah, that's one of two headline offers here. The other one, Charlie Austin to score and QPR to win, which is in the market at 7-1. Let's take a look at Saturday's 3 p.m. kickoffs next. Swansea versus Newcastle, first of all. Swansea 10-11, the draw 23-10. Newcastle in the betting at 16-5. Lee, Alan Pardew is turning into one of the game's great survivors at the moment. He just will not leave. There's no way he's going to walk away from the club. If you get a spare 10 minutes, have a look at the sackpardew.com website, which is absolutely fantastic, especially the feature they run, Lee, called Alan's Thought for the Day, which is absolutely spectacular.
Wow.
There's some absolute belters in there. Complete Partridge moments from Alan Pardew. I get a feeling, though, he's winding the fans up purposely at the moment, Alan Pardew, by hinting that Mike Ashley's got some serious thinking to do over the next few days, few weeks. But Alan Pardew is not bothered. He will stay until he's sacked.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And you know, when you talk to people in the game, he's very thick-skinned, doesn't really care what people say. He's quite an arrogant kind of chap, I guess, in a nice way. You know, I like, you know, that kind of arrogant confidence about him where he's like, look, I'm doing the job. Sack me if you want, but I'm the guy who's doing the job here.
I've heard that he walks around and when he's in the casino, he'll see a hairstyle that he likes. And his phrase, apparently, is, I'm having that. I'm having that. Anything that he sees that he likes, I'm having that.
Really?
Haircuts, shoes, like trousers, anything, I'm having that.
French obscure French players from Ligue 1.
Especially those.
Well, they're in a bit of bother, aren't they, as we know. You know, they've not impressed many people at all. Only lost 1-0 at Stoke, of course, the other night, but again, Stoke probably could have scored more. They had the win in the League Cup, which is the only kind of saving grace at the minute. I think what they're doing, and it's quite obvious what they're trying to do, is go away from home and shut up shop and get some results away from home, i.e. draws. I mean, they managed it at Villa. They went to Gillingham and won 1-0. All right, no great surprise, I suppose. Didn't work at Southampton. Southampton mauled them 4-0.
Yeah.
Beat Palace in the end in the League Cup away from home. I know you lost 1-0 to Stoke on Monday night, as we say. I think they'll try and do the same thing again, but I think they'll come unstuck in the similar way they came unstuck at Southampton. We know Swansea like to pass the ball about quite a lot. Angel Rangel is missing for them. He was banned because of the sending off against Sunderland, so that's a bit of a blow to them. But you know, we've been talking about a player. You know, I've been talking about a player who I really like, and that's Wilfried Bony. Now, sooner or later, this guy has got to score a goal or two. This has got to be his chance. I mean, he's 5-4 any time, which is too short for me to play just on its own, you know, because he's not been scoring enough. But 5-2 for Bony to score and Swansea to win, good enough for me. I think they will win. 10-11 is a little bit skinny. I don't like Swansea odds on. But yeah, I think it'll be a low-scoring win for Swansea. Swansea in under 2.5.
Taking quite a few of the headline offers this week as well, Mr.
Yeah, I like
Phelps.
Them. I like them.
Wilfried Bony to score and Swansea to wins in the betting at 5-2.
I think it's because I don't like the odds on. I don't like West Ham at odds on. Don't like Swansea at odds on. So
you like
just
the scorers.
A bit of value, yeah.
Mm. Tom, one of a fantastic up to start here ahead of this game. Of the 17 ever-present Premier League sides in 2014, Newcastle have the fewest points, just 19. Scored the fewest goals, just 19. Conceded the most, 47. That is not a recipe for success.
Pretty damning statistics. And I think someone had told me the other day they scored one goal away from home in the last 6 months, and that was a Skirtle own goal. so they haven't really, have they? I mean, I look at the Newcastle situation and I feel a little bit of sympathy for Alan Pardew. I know he doesn't get much for the way he comes across and on TV and things, and certainly the Newcastle fans aren't happy. But I know a few Newcastle fans, and they're not in the sack Pardew camp. They're in a situation where the owner's their issue. And the owner normally is an issue at a football club, but it's the manager who gets most of the flack. And, you know, I think he's dealing with a squad that has been, you know, ripped apart season after season. And I mean ripped apart in terms of the best player leaving. So I don't know what Newcastle's aims are this year. If it's to stay up, then they're struggling because people are looking at a calendar year. They're looking at form going back a long way. And I watched Stoke and Newcastle in the week, and Newcastle just don't look like scoring. I mean, he doesn't have the faith to start Papiss Cissé, which is why he had to bring him on, because Cissé's all-round build-up, link-up play is nowhere near good enough. He's a good goal scorer in around that penalty area. But it's a real worry for them finding the back of the net. They haven't scored in 7 of the last 8 away games, Newcastle. And I look at Swansea as the only team to score in this at 2-1. I agree with Lee. I think it's a low-scoring victory for Swansea, who I think were set back a little bit by that defeat at home against Southampton. Looking at goal scorers, I always think Nathan Dyer, who's got 3 already this year, is a good price at 23-10 any time. And Sigurdsson, who's he's made a great start to the season in terms of his assists, he will get a goal soon. He's already made 4 goals this year. He is around about 17-10 any time, and I like both those players.
Superb. Let's have a look at Leicester next. Leicester taking on at Burnley. Bit of a surprise, Tom, to see Leicester beaten at Crystal Palace. Possibly a little bit of a letdown following their win against Manchester United. The 4-5 to win the game, Leicester. The draw 9-4. Burnley, a 4-1. Burnley, Tom, they could turn out to be the worst team in Premier League history if things keep going the way they are.
Yeah, they could do, and it's through no real fault of the manager or the players that are there, because it's effectively the same squad. And when I looked at the summer, and obviously I followed these teams closely in the Championship last year, and when you look at the summer spending, you kind of look when these teams go up, and they both flew all season long. Fantastic, the pair of them. But they did it in such contrasting ways. Leicester have been spending millions for years building a squad, and you know, it took them actually a long time. I think if they hadn't done it last year, they'd have been serious sort of house of cards falling around the place, I think. But I look at Burnley and I look at the summer signings. You know, Leicester go and sign a Joa from Brighton for an absolute fortune, a proven goal scorer in the Championship and someone who's made the step up very easily. And then I look at Burnley. They sign Jukovic and Sordell. You know, two players who, even on their day in the Championship, are not going to be scoring 20 goals in the second tier of English football, never mind the Premier League. Yes, Ings has been injured and there's been a problem there. That, you know, Burnley fans I know are clinging to the fact that Ings and Vokes, when they get fit, they're going to cause havoc. I don't see it. I see it as the same squad that went up brilliantly last year because they were organised. But when you know, the step up to the Premier League is huge. They don't have enough pace in the team, enough variety, whereas Leicester have got players who are on the up. You know, Jamie Vardy's sensational. If you've got pace in your side, it is such a huge, huge asset. You can get a long way in the Premier League, I think, if you've got some pace to run and cause problems. And I just think, I know they had that setback, Leicester, but again, you can't see Burnley finding the back of the net here. And it's a huge, huge concern for them. And defensively, they're in trouble. And I just think Leicester, with the players that they've got at their disposal, the options that they have, and I think Cambiasso, at first I saw that signing and thought, oh, I'm not too sure about that. But I think his performance against Manchester United was just brilliant. And he's going to link all of that together, really. He is so important. They've got leaders in the team like, you know, Wes Morgan at the back's fantastic. So I see a Leicester victory. Again, I'll probably see them keeping a clean sheet. And I think David Nugent would be a player for me with his penalties. He'd be somebody I would look at any time in this game. He scored in both fixtures between these two sides last year in the Championship. Real thorn in Burnley's side. Leicester got a win and a draw in the Championship. 6-4 any time. I'd take Nugent to find the back of the net.
Good stuff. Thank you, Tom. Lee, that optimism of that Scott Arfield strike against Chelsea, that's quickly dissipated. They've not scored since in the Premier League, which is incredible, really. Gone five matches without a goal, Burnley, in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Just poor, aren't they, really?
Yeah, I like them, you know, and I think, you know, they're one of those teams that it'd be nice to see them do well, and the way they pressure teams in the Championship, etc., etc. It's just not working for them. And, that, you know, once we said last week, that West Brom game, if they concede early, they're in desperate trouble because then they've got to open up. If they can sit solid and keep you at bay for the first half, then, you know, it starts to become easier for Burnley. But I think, you know, Leicester will score early. Leicester have scored early in their three home games so far, and that was against Everton when they scored after 22 minutes, against Arsenal when they scored after 22 minutes, and against Manchester United when they scored after 17 minutes. Leonardo and Joe are getting all three of those, by the way.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, all three of them weren't the first goal. They were already down when he scored those
goals.
We
talked about that last week. Amazing. They bounce back quickly, don't they?
Very, very quickly. So, I mean, you know, as a kind of cautionary note here, if Burnley do go a goal up in this one, and you're looking at it in play, I'd get on Leicester even more so, you know, if they would go a goal down. Ajoa's stats, he's had 12 shots on goal and he's scored 5 goals so far. Yeah, I've got to be with him again. I think, you know, we know I like him. It's another headline offer, actually. I think Leicester do win the game. I mean, I just think they'll get after Burnley quite early. I think you're right. I think there was a bit of a hangover after the Man United thing. They almost started to believe themselves a little bit.
Yeah.
And Nigel Pearson kind of referred to that, and he'll get him right back down to earth. You know, these are two managers who I think two of the most promising managers in the game, and I can see Nigel Pearson being a future England manager the way he's going, the kind of respect he commands. And I really like Pearson. He'll have got stuck into them this week, I think, Leicester, and they'll come out, and I think they'll win this one fairly handily. I wouldn't be surprised if it's something like the West Brom scoreline against Burnley.
I like the minus a goal as well, Leicester, on the handicap, 21-10.
Yeah, really, that's great. I mean this is, there's no need to go for this, but I could see -2.
Yeah,
I really think Leicester could get after them in a big way. Ajoa to score 2, by the way. If you think we're right about that, it's 7-1. 2 or more
that's
is 7-1. Hat-trick 25-1. I always think that's a huge difference.
Yeah.
If you've got 2 and you're battering a team, the third ain't a big surprise, is it? 25-1? That might be my nap of the week.
Leicester 4-5, the draw 9-4. Burnley in the betting at 4-1. Go on, Lee.
Very quickly, as well as all the problems that Burnley have got, he's got a midfield crisis. Dean Marnie, David Jones and Nathaniel Chalobah all out. So may have to continue with the team that played last week. Scott Arfield into central midfield. Stephen Reid making his debut alongside Ross Wallace and Michael Keightley. I mean, you know, these aren't Premier League level players, you know.
So. That's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hull next up against Crystal Palace. Hull 11-10. The draw 21-10. Crystal Palace in the betting at 4-5. Lee, I've been pretty keen on Hull, but they've still only managed to pick up 6 points in 6 matches. They haven't been staunch enough defensively. That's been the problem with Hull this season so far. Very interesting what Crystal Palace have done under Neil Warnock. We've talked about this off air. They've been willing to concede possession, but still been effective in the league.
Yes, and this is kind of the fashionable thing to do at the moment, isn't it? To, you know, be happy with, you know, I think Spurs did it. Was it Spurs' lowest percentage possession ever in the Premier League, or some stat like that, against Arsenal? Yeah, give away possession, we'll hit you on the break and we'll trust our strikers. Palace have got pace, and that's the thing that gets you goals, you know, against any team in this division, especially if Hull are coming onto them. I mean, Hull, you look at the home form so far, and they've played more games than Palace, of course, because they've been in Europa League action, scored two against Trenton, scored one at home against Stoke, scored two against Lochran, two against West Ham, two against Man City. Crystal Palace away form of late. They could have scored two against Arsenal, but only got the one. Scored three at Walsall, three at Newcastle, three at Everton. I mean, this has to have goals in it. I really can't see Hull sitting back and defending in this one. Palace will go for it on the counter-attack, of course, because Hull are coming onto them. It seems a really obvious one for me, this. I mean, over 3.5 goals at 3-1. That's what I'm going for. I just think this is going to be a 3-2 or something like that.
Tom, what do you make of this game?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think there's going to be goals. I don't think either side really can defend. I mean, with Hull, I've not been a great fan of them. I think they've made some pretty astute signings. I think the blow, you know, of losing a player that I know pretty well, Robert Snodgrass, at the start of the season was huge, because he's such a creative influence, as he was for Norwich last year. So I think they're stuttering a little bit. And I think what you're getting at the moment at Hull is almost that point where, well, where do we go from here? Do we have a defined style of play? They came up playing 3-5-2, and you know, they kind of, Steve Bruce wants to stick with that. He's had to change it around with various injuries. There's no doubt their squad is strong, and with Neil Warnock, you're never quite sure how his team is, how it's going to progress sort of long term. He's good at going on sort of little runs, really. And I think sort of long term for Crystal Palace, I still think they're going to struggle. I mean, he's inherited a good squad, a squad that can score. And the point I made about Leicester is the same one that Lee mentioned, their pace in the side. And you know, when you've got that, you've got players like Punchiner and Bolasie who, you know, on their day, and that's the phrase you've got to use with those two, on their day, can cause a lot of problems. And again, you know, I watched West Ham take the game to Hull, and they were a bit jittery at home. They didn't really take control of the match. I didn't think it was only for spells. They scored sort of breakaway goals. So, yeah, I'd be looking at goals in this one. I'd also look for a red card. These fixtures last year, there was a red card for the away side in both games. And an away, a red card in this one is around about 7-2.
Lee?
I think we've just got some of the card markets up, actually. And I didn't mention it earlier on because there were no card markets in the game. But City to have more cards in their game away from home is another one that I really like. So if the card markets are available in that City game, have a quick check on that one as well. City have been very ill-disciplined away from home this season. So
speaking of red cards, by the way, the next game, Sunderland versus Stoke. A red card in that match, 100-30. Those of you interested in trends with only a small sample size, admittedly, there's been a red card in four of the last five Premier League games between Sunderland and Stoke. 100-30 in this match. Sunderland 8-5 to win the match. The draw 2-1. Stoke 19-10. From a betting perspective, Tom, this is the tightest game of the weekend.
I would say so. I would look at Sunderland's. You know, they haven't scored in the last two Premier League games. You know, I think, again, a bit of an issue for Gus Poyet at the moment this season has been sort of getting the team to gel. It's been a stuttery start for them. Whereas I've seen more of Stoke than I have of Sunderland, being honest. And again, I think Victor Moses is having such a great influence at Stoke. You know, he's giving them some wing play with purpose. And Diouf on the other side as well. They're going to be a real, real handful. And Peter Crouch looks to have his mojo back. I don't know what he's done over the summer, but, you know, he's back amongst the goals. He'd be somebody I would look at, because I think this Sunderland defence is certainly gettable. But I think it's tight. I mean, I would look at unders here. The last sort of five head-to-head, there's only been six goals between these two sides. I think it will be tight. And possibly have a look at Peter Rodden Wingy. Four in his last seven games against Sunderland. He's got 4-7 against Sunderland. So maybe have a look at him to find a back of that, if indeed he does play.
Thank you, Tom. And Mr. Phelps?
Yeah, hard to argue with much of that. I mean, Stoke, another one of these teams who seem to be more suited away from home now because of the way they play. You know, they're happy to sit back, and we know they're strong defensively. That we know they can soak up pressure, and we know that they've got some pace now and some quality up front. So, you know, I think Stoke are a good bet to win this at 19-10. You know, it's just a smidgen smaller than the draw, and I can see why the draw is a big player. But Sunderland, you know, are struggling to break teams down, aren't they? Struggling to get through them. You know, 0-0 against Swansea, of course. They were held to a goalless draw against Burnley before that. Lost to Stoke in the League Cup 2-1 just a couple of weeks ago. I see no reason to go against that. You know, both teams were up for that game, I think, the Sunderland-Stoke game. So I'm happy with that one. Just Stoke straight on the 19th centre. I'll be back in Stoke more away from home than I will be at home this season, to be fair.
I think one of the things in this game as well is I mentioned the wide players, you know, Diouf and Moses. I look at the wide players for Sunderland, Johnson and Buckley. They're not getting anything creative out of those. So I know Johnson had a flurry for a few months last season, but he's not done anything really since then. And people like Larson, Rodwell and Catamol, you know, they're good at sort of controlling midfields, but are they real creative forces? Larson from set pieces, yes. So I think that's where this game maybe is won and lost, and I would much prefer Stoke's wide players to Sunderland's.
There's a little bit of a doubt over Diouf, actually. He went off with a hamstring injury against Sunderland, so it might be Arnautović replaced him and he might come in, which I think might even be worse for Sunderland, because Arnautović is one of those players who's, you know, on his day he can cause all sorts of problems.
Yeah, he is quick, isn't he?
Yeah.
Next up, Liverpool versus West Brom. Liverpool 4-9, the draw 100-30. West Brom in the betting at 6-1. Lee, Liverpool 14th in the league, disappointing in the Champions League midweek against Basel as well. A team that looks a shadow of its former self, really. Yeah. Brendan Rodgers' stock is starting to fall. At around about the same velocity as Steven Gerrard's reputation at the moment.
Yeah. I don't need to talk too much about this. Everyone knows what's happening to Liverpool, and people who've been watching West Brom recently will have seen they've won 3 on the bounce, including the cup match against Hull. Won 1-0 at Tottenham, 3-2 against Hull, 4-0 against Burnley. I know Liverpool are a better team on paper, but you know, at the prices, I've just got to be, you know, with West Brom. I mean, this has been clipped in a little bit, so I'm a little bit disappointed. When we looked at this, the price for this, I think it was just yesterday, it was 2-1.
Yeah.
17-10 for the draw and West Brom. West Brom have won 2 out of the last 3 visits to Anfield. We're beating 3-1 last season, but before that they'd won 2-0 and 1-0 in the seasons before that. I think they'd finally broken a hoodoo before the 1-0 win, and when that happened, they won 2-0 the following season. I think that's a great price. 17-10 for a Liverpool team who, again, coming back from a tough European game, not really showing much. We're better against Everton, to be fair, but Everton really, you know, sat back in. I think West Brom on the break will give Liverpool a bit of a run for the money. They lost 4-1 at Anfield last season. Do you know who got 3 of them?
Luis Suarez,
yeah,
was it?
So I mean, you know, without him in the team, of course, yeah, I love that. West Brom all the draw, 17-10,
and they're heavily reliant on Daniel Sturridge as well now, Tom, and it just goes to show how far Liverpool have fallen, that they need this man as desperately as they do.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't, you know, replaced Suarez. I mean, that's pretty evident. It's interesting now that the, you know, the tabloids have kind of turned their attentions to Liverpool. They're the crisis club, their flavour of the fortnight, really, in terms of getting some stick. I mean, not only this morning, I've seen the papers, you know, there's obviously the flare-up, or I don't know if it was a flare-up or just a heated discussion, you know, with Roy Hodgson and Brendan Rodgers over the fitness of Sturridge. You know, that's caused a bit of friction, but it's caused friction because Liverpool aren't playing well. You know, if Liverpool were firing, I mean, losing Sturridge would still be a blow, but I don't think it'll be, you know, as much would be made of it. And then I'm reading stuff this morning, Balotelli's, every inch of his performance is being analysed and scrutinised because of the man he was replacing. I think that's a bit unfair on him. He's not in the same league as Luis Suarez, and I just worry a little bit about Liverpool, because I think the players they've brought in have not proved it yet, and nobody has, and there's an over-reliance on one or two players, people like Gerrard still, you know, from set pieces, Raheem Sterling, who is, you've got to remember how young he is and how little football he's actually played. It's going to take him a little bit of time to be performing week in, week out, but there's just such pressure on them now, and I can't see Liverpool keeping a clean sheet in this game. You know, I think West Brom have some players. There's no doubt. I mean, people might look sometimes at head-to-head records and think, well, they know it's new set of players and this and that. But let me tell you, Alan Irving will be in the dressing room, and he'll already be doing it in the team meeting probably today. And he'll be telling the players, look what we've done here in previous years. Look how vulnerable Liverpool are. And they'll take a huge amount of confidence from that. So I would certainly look at West Brom scoring in this one. I can't see Liverpool keeping a clean sheet anymore. And Lee's right. You know, at the price is 4-9, Liverpool, I could not take them at that price.
Can I just say one thing, DK? I mean, yeah, that's all. Yeah, we could beat up on Liverpool. But one thing I would say is they've fallen to such a low level that they're missing Sturridge. He scored 37 goals in 52 appearances for Liverpool. That's not a bad record, is it? Of course they're missing him.
Is Daniel Sturridge world class?
No, not yet, but he's on his way there. Yeah. Those kind of stats.
He's always going to get injured, isn't he? His injury record is horrible.
We've said it a few times, haven't we? 18 games he missed last season, 14 the season before, which makes that 37-52.
You've got a budget for that, haven't you?
Without a doubt.
Definitely.
Without a doubt. And Rodgers admitted this week, or yesterday I think it was, that the reason he's bought Balotelli was because he was the best we could get.
Yeah.
Not a glowing endorsement, is it?
No, it's not. Both with West Brom then, in some form or another in this match. Let's have a look at the final game this weekend, which is Tottenham versus Southampton, 2:05 p.m. kickoff on Sunday. Not televised this game. Tottenham 5-4, the draw 21-10, Southampton 12-5. Two headline offers: Emmanuel Adebayor to score and Tottenham to win is 3-1. Graziano Pella to score and Southampton to win is 5-1. Tom, we finish off with one of the most intriguing games this weekend. Southampton second in the league, playing great football, some quality players in the squad, and Mauricio Pochettino going back to his former club as well.
Yeah, that's the interesting angle, I suppose, to this. And we have to have an angle, don't we, in all the Premier League matches. And the man who replaced him, I mean, I think he's got a big job at Tottenham. I kind of look at their squad and I think, you think about where they were a few years ago and you're kind of looking at their squad now, and it does not possess the kind of players that would sort of panic a lot of Premier League sides. There's still some quality there, but you're looking at Soldado, who I think they should just cut their losses on him. Adebayor, again, he has sort of a 3-month spell, doesn't he, every couple of years, where suddenly you remember him and then he sort of fades away. There's a lot of onus now on people like Harry Kane, who has done well, but I think he's probably in a position where he's suddenly in the Spurs first team. He probably wasn't expecting to be here, even at this stage, the amount of loan moves he's had and everything else. I'm so impressed with Southampton, and actually one of the most impressive results for me for Southampton, not only that the League Cup win at Arsenal will have given him a huge boost, but I think that win away at Swansea, that was one of those results a few weeks ago where I really sort of stood up and took notice of it, because I know Southampton have been playing well, but Swansea had as well, and at home, to keep a clean sheet against Swansea and to come away with all 3 points, they are absolutely motoring along. And I think Tottenham are a little bit stop-start. Few too many draws for them. I mean, they made hard work of it against Nottingham Forest. And at home, Liverpool were pretty comfortable. West Brom played fantastically and got the victory. I think if I'm looking at this match now, I'm looking at Southampton at 12-5. And I like them. I like the way they play. I think they could have too much for Spurs here. The worry for me is Spurs scoring more than one, and I think they need to score more than one to win this game.
Southampton 12-5 for Tom. Lee?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'm just going to hit you with some stats here, because I think these are I was amazed at these stats. You look at the offensive statistics in the Premier League so far. Southampton second only to Manchester City in shots on target, 18 away from home. In terms of the defensive display, they've allowed the least number of shots on their goal, 7. You look at for Tottenham defensively, they've the fifth from bottom of the shots conceded table. They've conceded 36 shots on goal, and offensively at home they're third bottom, only having a total of 7 shots on target at home. I mean, you wouldn't believe it, would you?
No.
You'd think they would be the other way around, really. Southampton, Tottenham,
that so offence isn't good enough for Tottenham, is it, that offence?
No, not
simple.
Neither is a D.
No,
if we're going to go NFL for a second. Look, and I can, I'm starting to understand why Southampton are the prices they are. The bookmakers have always got them short. I'm agreeing with Tom in that I think Southampton are a good bet to win, but I also think, given those stats, I really like this bet: Southampton to score over 1.5 goals at 15-8. If Southampton come at them, Tottenham may open up and really go at them. It could be a really nice open game, this one. So I'm going to go with that. Basically, Southampton to score 2 or more goals in this game at 15-8. Pele's in great form, by the way. Wouldn't put anyone off having a bet on him to score.
The headline offer as well.
Yeah, it's another good one, isn't it? It's a big price, that, isn't it? Looks big anyway.
5-1, Graziano Pella to score and Southampton to win the game. Looks nice.
Yeah, it does look good. I mean, Ron Atkinson, formerly of the punt, moment silence there for he's obviously still with us, but he's not with the punt anymore. He used to say all the time, as a manager, you should never make a mistake with a player that you've worked with before, and Graziano Pella is a great example. Koeman had him.
Absolutely.
Knows his game inside out. Didn't take long to settle in. First of all, it was Tadic who was grabbing all the headlines, but he's looking at a good player. And of course, Shadley for Tottenham as well, though. If it is a game laden with goals, 13-5 for him to score, that seems daft. I mean, he's really fitting into that little role of having him up front with Lamella and Eriksen playing around him. Not the greatest player in the world, Chadli, in my mind, but he's a good little finisher. So that's not a bad one either. 13-5. There's a lot of value in this game, I think.
And the one thing as well, if Tottenham lose three home Premier League defeats in a row, Juan de Ramos was the manager last time, chaps, when that
really?
Happened. So
wow.
You kind of think, it's not crisis time or anything, but I think it's a massive job for Pochettino there.
Tottenham aren't a sacking club, are they?
No. No, of course not. Stick with him.
We've not even mentioned that they were in the Europa League midweek.
I watched
the
game actually.
I did as well, and they drew 1-1 with Besiktas, and Besiktas well worth their point there.
Yeah, they nearly knocked Arsenal out in London a few weeks back, and then they've gone to Tottenham, and probably deserve more again.
Definitely.
Slaven Bilic looked. I was going to say suicidal. That's a bit strong. But he looked crestfallen at the end.
He did.
Like they got a 1-1 draw.
Let's finish off with the naps then, chaps. Mm. And Mr. Phelps,
I need
you
to go to the table soon, don't I?
Yeah, you do. You actually had a winner last week.
11-5.
I'm treating this like I treat my fantasy football sides in many ways.
Right.
Really excited for the first couple of weeks. And
lose interest.
It suddenly goes wrong and I lose interest very, very quickly.
Yeah, I see.
And that's kind of what has happened with the nap. I can't remember what my nap was last week, even.
It was Chelsea. It was
just a loser, but it was very, very close to being a winner.
It was Arsenal to beat Tottenham.
It was. So they got.
Go first,
it wasn't close to being a winner
first,
actually at all. I'm going with Leicester as my nap this week. I'm just down on Burnley. I think they're dreadful. I think Leicester at a shade of odds on will bounce back quickly. 4-5 Leicester. I am tempted by the headline offer there as the best bet as well, with Ajoa to score and Leicester to win at 5-2. But I'll keep it safe this week and go with Leicester at 4-5 to win. Tom?
I would have to look at, this is not because he's in my fantasy team, but I've got to look at Sergio Aguero anytime, even money. I think it's a great price for a team that will have a lot of possession that I think will win the game pretty comfortably at Aston Villa. He scored in 10 of his last 12 away games in the Premier League. Penalties, everything. I just can't see, when I envisage this game, I can't see Sergio Aguero not finding the back of the net. And Villa have struggled against quality sides. Arsenal ripped them to pieces, and quality players find space in a defence that has been very naive at times. So I think Aguero anytime.
Mr. Phelps?
I'm going for a goal scorer as well. I'm going for Diafra Sakho for West Ham anytime, 7-5. Love the headline offer, but just to be safe, because it's a nap, I'm just going to go with him to score anytime at 7-5. QPR conceded 55 shots on their goal away from home, and he scored his goals, of course. I think I said it's at 3 in the Premier League from his 12 shots so far, so I expect him to get 4 or 5 shots on goal against QPR, and I expect him to bag one of them. So 7-5 anytime for me.
I'm confident. I've got a good feeling about this nap treble here. Leicester 4-5. Sergio Aguero to score even money. Diafra Sakho to score at 7-5. 7.64-1 if you fancy following the nap treble this week.
There are a couple of prices. Talking about trebles, I think Leicester are a great bet, 4-5. 19-20 West Ham to beat QPR. I think that's a great bet as well. You add City into that. You're looking at like nearly a 9-2 treble there.
Yeah.
I think that's got some legs in it. That has. You can add one of those big teams in. City should win that game. I think that's decent.
I'd throw Swansea in the mix.
You could easily throw them in, couldn't you, against Newcastle?
I think if Pardew had gone, it would be a different scenario, wouldn't it? But with him still there, there's a lot of negativity surrounding the club.
Mm.
Thank you, Mr. Kerwin.
Thank you very much.
Good luck to Leeds this weekend.
Yeah.
Well, they need it.
I'm not sure if my good wishes will help them at all, but you never know.
I'll pass it on to the players, Lee, and see if it's the rousing endorsement they need before the game.
What you need is, I watched this week for the first time, was that Life of Ryan. Did you watch that when it was on before?
No.
It was when Ryan Giggs took over as manager at Man United, and I guess it must be his company or a company he's affiliated to. They did I think it was the same people who did the Class of 92 documentary. And it was really interesting seeing behind the scenes, and how nervous he was about everything. But there was one moment quite near the end where he had them in a team meeting, the screen was up, and it wasn't before they went out onto the pitch or anything, but they're all watching the game, watching the video and, getting them going. And they'd just lost to Sunderland, and it was the next game after that. And to call his speech lackluster would be doing it a favour. I was just thinking, if you were there, it wasn't like, lads, we've got to get into this. Last game of the season. Come on, let's have this. We're going to do this. We're Manchester United. It was like, Yeah, so that's what I've said to you all, and yeah, good luck at the weekend. That was it.
Fantastic. Mr. Kerwin, thank you again.
Thank you.
And thanks to you, Mr. Phelps.
Cheers, mate.
Remember, you can download all our podcasts via iTunes, and of course, search for the William Hill page on Audio Boom as well. That's where all our on-demand audio lives. Also, go to williamhill.com/podcast for all the online audio on the website. Thank you for listening to the Pump Podcast, and we will be back next week. Speak soon.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.